what Brooklyn sounds like.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And guess what? I'm Dr. Lisa, you know, the self-proclaimed psychotherapist. You get it, right? I try to ask personal questions, okay? That's pretty much it. That's what I'm after. Yeah, so thanks so much for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. And, you know, now is a really, let's put it this way, folks. Now's a time to like get a tax deduction, okay? And I know you're going to be looking for one, right? What better tax deduction than helping a nonprofit, all volunteer radio station like Radio Free Brooklyn? We're doing community service here. We're bringing everything that everybody needs, wants, cares to listen to. And we are sharing good information, brightening lives, and letting you know what bands are playing. Some good bands out here in Bushwick. You know that? But anyway, you should go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate, or just check out our website. Get to know us a little bit, okay? We're friendly. We're friendly people. We're really good people to know. We have connections. Sign up for a newsletter. Anyway, so here's the deal, okay? I have this really amazing guest today, a comedian and an author and a pretty big deal podcaster, too. All right, that's a competition, maybe. I don't know, but she's not here yet. But I have on notice that she will be here momentarily. So you know what I'm going to do when she gets here? What I'm going to do is put on one of my favorite musicians, Sean Spana. I'm going to put on his music. We're going to start with "Set Up to Self Destruct." Shout out to Sean Spana, if you're listening, playing. Anybody know Sean? Let him know. And when Sadia gets here, I'm going to make her comfortable, and then I'm going to be back. It's probably going to be the length of one song. But before she gets here, let's see if I can tell you a little bit about her, okay? So anyway, I have met her. She's a lovely, bright, British woman she's Muslim, from a Muslim background. We're going to find out more about this. And she created, okay, so there's a whole bunch of things. She's a comedian, right? I'm sure she wants to talk about her book. And her book is called Sex Bomb, a memoir, The Lives and Loves of an Asian Babe. So here's I wanted to ask her before I got on the air if I'm saying it right. I want to be respectful. Hijab. I'm nervous about saying it wrong, so forgive me. But anyway, so she is very open about being sex positive, and she also wears a hijab, traditional Muslim woman's scarf. Is that her?
Hi.
Hey, there she is in her traditional woman's Muslim scarf. So what I'm trying to tell you guys is that on a socially, on a stereotypical level, that is a disconnect. And do you guess what we're talking about? Sadia. Yes. Am I saying your name right?
Yes.
Sadia.
Yes.
Okay. And then also, how do I say hijab? Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Okay, I was nervous about all that. Okay, why don't you put on your headphones?
Okay, great.
Okay, well, that's it. I wanted to play. I was going to play some Sean Spana music, but I guess we'll have to say that. But Sean Spana is a great musician. You should totally check him out. Okay. So anyway, I was just telling them, Sadia, about the book that you've written. I just got started. You know, starts at two.
Amazing.
We didn't get to have our usual pre-show chat, but that's okay because I'm just glad to see you.
Oh, me too. Thank you for having me. Oh. You have such a great voice, so I'm just delighted to be in your company.
Oh, well, that's very sweet of you. So anyway, I just wanted to tell you there's three areas that Sadia is professional in. Comedy, stand-up comedy, but then there's podcasting. She co-created and hosts the award-winning podcast No Country for Young Women, which tackles love, life, and work from a multicultural perspective. And she's an author. Her debut, Sex Bomb, which I just mentioned to you guys, navigates the nuances of British Asian life with candor and wit. So I think I've covered all three areas.
I thought you were
going to
say I'm
here.
Really good at sex.
I would imagine. Well, you know what? I think sex, like many other things, I don't think there's necessarily a technique or anything. It's enthusiasm, right? It's all about enthusiasm, and you have the enthusiasm.
And I think it's like a balance of enthusiasm, right? Because you know, you want to be cool and you want to make the other person feel comfortable. And everybody's, I guess, zest for enthusiasm might be a little bit different. But I hear you and I agree with you that there isn't necessarily a right or wrong. And obviously, I'm not saying about how you get there. But when you are there, it's not about like there isn't a textbook approach to sex.
Well, no. And it's also very individual. Like I might love having sex with somebody that you think is, you know, a deadbeat in bed.
Yeah.
Probably. Who knows?
things occur to you that, you know, I guess in other kind of endeavors, you are more kind of aware of. And things like in that department definitely creep up on you in a different way. Like you might find someone eating a pudding, a banana pudding from Magnolia Bakery, very sexy. You know, it's a very rich, uncharted kind of area.
It is. And I don't personally like to think of sex as something that is a skill. I think it's about being present for somebody.
Think it's about it's almost like a level of communication with your partner as well. Coming off your point about presentness, I think it's about, it's almost like a connection and that, you want to kind of be there and be enjoyable and be enjoyed.
Right, yeah. But I also think that, you know, there's so many weird, it's so primitive that it's hard to even... put a lot of boundaries.
What would you say? Because I know from our previous chat, Doctor, that you are in a very good relationship, a secure, long one, which I hugely admire and respect. So, what would you say? Like, is kind of like make? I forgot my fucking question with that whole intro. But I think what for you is like good sex.
Good sex. What is good sex?
And it doesn't have to be about your relationship, but maybe just along the way, things that you really feel are help it make it a good, other than just...
I actually think that like some of the best sex I've had is fairly random.
Right.
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with, and including with my partner. I mean, it varies... You know,
you mean
a
like
lot.
Outdoors or like what do you mean by the random bit? Like
I think like, you know, like the stars align all of a sudden. It's like having a good time. You can set everything up to have a good time, but you can plan on having a good time, but okay. You can't automatically have a good time.
So it's a bit spontaneity. Who doesn't like a little bit of mystery or, you know, surprise?
I think we actually schedule sex.
Okay.
Because when you, I recommend that, especially for people who are in long-term relationships, because you get busy. You get busy.
Yeah,
and you want to
prioritize certain things.
Yeah, and you know, we're both out doing things, and you just have to make sure you're both around and, like, kind of in the mood at this, you know. So we plan ahead at this point.
I like the organization.
I have to plan. I mean, not that, you know, not that it's, we don't, you know, we don't have rules, that's for sure. But I actually, you know, I actually really want to find out because you're here from London for sure. For how long have you been here? How long?
2 months.
2 months. And how long are you staying for?
I have a week left. Less than a week.
Oh, nice.
I'm so sad. I love New York. I want to move here. It's amazing.
I've had so many people. Well, not a lot, but I have a bunch of people. I'm having an artist who's going to be doing a show at the gallery I just opened at Brooklyn Comedy Collective. It opens the 16th of November. From London. He's going to be here for a few days.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. Some really funny British artists.
Nice.
Yeah. So you're enjoying your time in New York?
It's so much fun. So I went to Magnolia Bakery yesterday. I had their apple and cinnamon like pudding because that's their seasonal one. And then I went to Levain's. So I've been doing, it's been a mixture of some like book promotion,
because you
and some touristy kind of exciting things, because it's my first US/New York visit in my life.
Is this your first time in New York?
Yeah, I can't believe I never came sooner. I think it would have been like, I mean, I think hindsight is great. I think I would have been certainly more inspired if I'd come earlier, but like, it's never too late. So
traveling anywhere new is inspiring.
Yeah,
I don't care where you go.
It was a good, I think it's the book coming out on the 26th of September really spurred me on, but it's a special place with special people. I think food and people is up there in terms of reasons to be anywhere. So
yeah, I do really like the people here because it's a shitty ass lifestyle, and it does attract people who I feel like it's less superficial in a way, because you got to put up with so much crap to live here. It's not a comfortable place to live.
Yeah,
so
it's certainly a grind. It's a grind, like hard. You guys is working hard. You're very busy.
Yeah, people are very motivated here. That can get a little exhausting. It's hard not to get caught up in the competitiveness, you know. But anyway, there's so much. We're gonna focus on you. I mean, that's my jam. So you started wearing a hijab at age 19. Now your family is clearly Muslim, right?
Yes,
and from India originally.
You
were born here
in the UK.
In the West.
Yes.
Yeah. And your parents were born.
My mom was also born in the West, and my father was born in India. And then my mother went to India on a trip and then proposed to my dad, which was really cool, because I think you hear so many stories about arranged marriages or even forced marriages, or like the woman being quite submissive. And yet the role model I had was my mom being super kind of a go-getter and just like following her heart.
Yeah, yeah. And also not pretty fearless woman, which we love.
Yes.
So we could consider you a first generation Londoner.
Yeah, totally.
So do they speak?
Urdu. Yeah, I mean, there's so many languages in India. Hindi was
I have been to India, a long, long time ago. That place was me. It's like definitely
the food.
The people are Indian. My impression was like they are not nearly, they're much more, they see themselves much more as a fabric of, they're all one, their egos are a lot quieter there.
I think that's a very nice way of putting it. I think that it's very humbling when you go there, because you see so much like differences than where we're used to. I think you see some people in really hardship, but with a genuine peaceful smile on their face, and it like really grounds me when I kind of as an experience, because I think sometimes we can focus on like the smaller you could say minor hiccups in life, and then they've got like serious issues, and they're kind of, you know, completely on top of,
because they have each other. That's what it feels like to me. They have like a real sense of
spirituality as well. I think
so
strong to like to be able to kind of cope with the world that they kind of are thrown at them.
So you started wearing the hijab. Was that your idea?
It was my idea. I act before I think usually. And nobody in my family was wearing it. In fact, nobody really in the UK was wearing it that much. So mm-hmm. I think it's because when I was younger at Saturday school, which was an Islamic kind of Saturday, you'd go to do extra mm-hmm. studies. I used to wear it as a younger person there and then I'll take it off. And so it stayed with me that, you know, this is something that a woman does or that I could do. And then I didn't realize why I was taking off. So then when I got a bit older and like able to make my own decisions, that's what I did. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't a big deal until like, I guess, terrorism started happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that kind of really painted or colored people's view of like what it symbolized. And mm-hmm. then that became obviously quite difficult to maneuver because mm-hmm. I was wearing it of my own free choice and its meaning to me wasn't apparent to anybody else and it became distorted as
Jesus, people are like so quick to judge. I don't know much. I'm very ignorant in this area.
That's okay.
I'm embarrassingly
no trouble.
So
that's okay,
but I'm not going to try to pretend otherwise. So it has a religious symbolism.
Yeah. So
and does it have a religious symbolism to you?
Great question. Do you want an honest answer?
This is a self-proclaimed psychotherapist. You bet I want an honest.
Oh, God. There's no place to hide. So I think it symbolizes many things. And like I would urge people who are curious to look at more authentic narratives as opposed to like kind of critical mm-hmm. or Western outside.
I'm asking you.
Yes. So one of the things it does symbolize is modesty. And for me, yes, I really think that that's kind of special about it. And to answer the other part of your question, which is a very valid and important question, is I guess I could be better as a hijabi. So some of the things that it symbolizes, you know, I definitely embrace them, but not always like consistently.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel guilty about that?
I don't, to be honest with you, because mm-hmm. I think it's a very personal thing. Yes, people can see it, but like anything, people can't see inside of you, you know, and mm-hmm. there's some, I say in the book, sorry, before you remember your point, I say in the book that there's some Muslim women who don't wear the hijab and they're probably better practicing than me. So it doesn't define you or, you know, completely dictate how your faith. You can't see somebody's commitment.
The thing that I'm trying to, this is what I'm trying to understand,
okay.
is that it's a very forthright symbol.
It's very what it stands out. When you see it,
it's just that, like, it's very superficial. It's like people have all sorts of beliefs, but there's a very, you know, obvious it's a very obvious physical manifestation of your beliefs.
Yeah.
That it's like wearing a sign.
Yeah,
in a certain way.
It's definitely something it's unavoidable in another
way of putting it.
I guess it's loud.
And it's a commitment. I mean, I don't know if it's comfortable or not, but it's a big commitment. That you got to keep that thing clean and put it on.
Every day.
Do you sleep with it?
No.
Okay, I don't know anything about this shit. It looks great. You look great. She's gorgeous, but...
No, what it is I think people... I've kind of lost.
No, no, I know you. Go ahead.
But no, I was.
Or take your time. Is what I'm really.
You know, it's good to ask questions if you don't know. Do you know what I mean? And it's fine. Like I think it might mean we practice all Muslims. Like we practice things a little bit differently. So one person's motivation could be different, and you know, sometimes people, it's habit. Like nobody forced me to wear it. There's a lot of misunderstandings about women's choice. And to go back on your point about the superficiality, I think unfortunately women tend to be, you know, misinterpreted, whether you wear a hijab or not. We always seem to be contorted by mainstream media or subjected by our bodies. So it's certainly the intention, I think, of the hijab to kind of put women on a higher level than kind of, you know, It's mm-hmm. certainly not meant to harm women. And I think mm-hmm. it's just the lack of maybe sometimes compassion or understanding towards it. Because mm-hmm. people see it as kind of making us smaller. But it's a choice. And, you know, a lot of people who convert to Islam actually embrace the hijab as well. So I don't think it's about making us smaller. I think it's about us having autonomy over our bodies.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, your choice to wear it or not. I mean, the fact... So you are religious,
yeah.
though? You
yeah,
are
yeah,
religious.
Yes,
so, okay. So it's clearly connected to, it's a clear connection right
yes.
there, however you practice your religion. But you're also, by wearing it, kind of a tour guide.
Representative.
You are, right?
Well, yeah.
And how do you feel about that? Are you, you know, it could be, I mean, I imagine that sometimes you're proud and sometimes it's like a shut up. You know,
do you have a specific examples of who you think might be where you want me to go with that? Like,
well, I mean, I mentioned it's like, you know, it's like wearing, you know, it's like wearing like a policeman's uniform in New York City. Everybody's going to ask you for directions.
Yeah,
so, you know what I mean? Like you're clearly yes. saying I'm a Muslim woman.
So
and,
to
yeah.
ask your question, I mean, in the very short time I've been in New York, I've experienced an acceptance like no other place.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Given that I'm not even from here as well, I think it's because your culture is so rich and everybody is so kind of individual and strong. And like, so nobody really stands out because everyone's in their comfortable in their skin, really.
Yeah.
I would say that. To be honest, it depends on the asker when I'm being a representative. So if somebody's nice or genuine or curious, all of those things, like I'm not a psycho, I can answer a question. But, you know, when somebody's kind of haggling and they seem to have a alternate agenda,
yeah.
or maybe they're kind of a bit like, I don't know, anti-Islamic even or whatever.
Yeah,
so
right.
That can be
that
can be difficult because it's not my job necessarily to kind of fix their issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it has its drawbacks for sure. But then, you know, if that's the way that the world wants to approach people, it depends on the context, I would say. But like, obviously, it's just additional work for people like me, which I guess we don't have to do, but like sometimes may choose to do.
Yeah. So is it like, is it forced on? Do you feel like it's forced on you or you're choosing it? It feels to me, and this is me, it sounds like it sounds like something you don't have to do.
Well, I'm
so I'm saying like
I'm a comedian and I have a bit of a like a profile. So
yeah,
like
right.
I'm called on TV and stuff. Like,
yes,
that industry is sometimes wants to kind of put people in boxes.
Right,
and so is that I guess that's not ideal because you know you want to be seen as an artist or as a person
yeah.
or not just the sum of your parts. So I think professionally that can be. You know, it can have positives because that's sometimes the reason you get a call. But also, if that's the only reason you're being called, then that can be limiting to the art that you want to express
right.
necessarily
or right.
the way that you're able to kind of come across. So, I think it depends, again, like what's going on with the global climate. So, like, we know what's going on right now. You know, there seems to be a heightened awareness of Muslims, whereas sometimes, so it may be, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I guess when there's more Muslim news.
When there's
more news about Muslims or something like that, then it's like a little bit more heightened.
Right.
And then, like, we also.
So it comes and goes.
Yeah, we're regular people, you know.
Take that for granted.
No. I know you don't. But what I mean is that we have our own stuff going on. So it's like it's difficult
right.
to coordinate. Like, you know, you said earlier, which is great, that, you know, you have to plan sex. You're that busy. And similarly, like I might have a headache one day. And so it's like I might have my personal shit going on.
Yeah, right.
And then something, you know, I've
right.
got to also.
Right.
But ultimately, I'm very blessed. I love my faith. And so if that's something
great.
That I have to do, I don't, you know, it's,
mm-hmm.
it's not a have to do, as you said, but I think it's like it's not a big deal because where I'm able to kind of like kind of help dispel any questions, it's not a bad
thing. Feel like, and I believe you are, like a great representative for...
Oh.
Do you feel like that, though?
I don't think that artists necessarily are
I know.
The best.
See, that's what I'm trying to understand, because so that's kind of complicated.
Yeah, so you're being very polite, but my book is called Sex Bomb, so that's not the type of story, I guess, that most people expect from a Muslim hijabi woman.
Right.
But I think it shows that I'm rounded, like, you know, Muslim women obviously do have sex, and so my book is about, like, sex bomb. It's a joke. It's like my life is it about I love sex, but it's also got a lot of bombs in it, and they're not terrorist related. So
yeah,
I talk about you know, could a Muslim woman be a sex bomb, i.e. an attainable, desirable woman, or what does it mean to be a sex bomb, because we don't seem to live in a very sex positive state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't endeavor to be a role model, and that's the thing. Like, I think mm-hmm. people want to kind of
they put that on you.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot in my mm-hmm. book.
Look
about,
at me, I'm like asking about it.
No,
but I want to find to get into it in terms sure. of the sex aspect, because so when you know, the stereotype, and I don't, you know, like I said, I'm not going to profess past the stereotype, and I'm talking to you, and I don't see stereotypes, because you're obviously quite an individual. But the thing is that, like, when I think about, like, going out and meeting dudes, you know, wearing that gives to me, I mean, I would imagine that would give a message saying that that isn't somebody who wants to have sex. Like, how do you, am I right about
yes.
that? And then how do you manage that? Like, how do you put it out there? Like, how do you do that? Like, how does that work?
It's really, like, a great question. I'm glad you brought it up. And the hijab certainly does mean that, like, you're not approached probably as non-hijabis are, because I think for some men it symbolizes maybe I'm already married. For other men it must mean that I'm off limits, or that I'm, like, not interested, etc., etc. So it does give off a lot of non-verbal cues, and I guess what that leads up to is that I don't get, like, a lot of male, or I don't get any, like, we'd say very, 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 very little male kind of attention. And so that's difficult, because when I've tried to give men attention, when I've tried to kind of maybe ask a guy out, you could say, they don't like a woman to be, or in my case, they don't like me being direct about it. So then they're not going to ask me, and I'm not asking them. So it's really complicated. I think communication is key. I don't like the apps, so I don't use them. So I think it's about trying to know what you want, so that when it shows up, that you're kind of in a good space to actually make something from it.
Well, you're kind of like a big symbol of mixed messages,
yeah,
right?
Because yeah. I think that's where the fodder for comedy comes through. That's why it's really funny, because women I hear, like you, or, you know, Western women or whatever,
yeah,
they're constantly having to turn down dick. Like, men are all, like, chasing women all the time, and I don't get that. So it's hilarious. Like, a woman who can't get dick is very funny. So from a comedic perspective,
yeah, no, it's great material.
It's good,
but you still gotta live.
I still have to live. But, you know, I mean, I think it's like, you know, it depends on what setting you're in. Some people find people at work. Some people find people randomly. Again, I'm going to come back to America. That is much more open-minded. And
New York.
I'm very open-minded, and people actually treat me like a regular person, which
yeah.
is very, very, like, feels like an honor and a privilege and refreshing, and it's exciting. And I think there's more potential here for relationships, or just fun friendships as well.
Yeah, that's true. We are in a bubble here. And I know I've been to London recently, and one of my best friends lives in London.
My commiserations that you had.
Yeah, and so I know I had a great time.
Where did
so,
you go?
Shout out David Mills.
I know David. He's a comedian.
Yeah,
great.
Do you know him? Did you see his show at Pangea?
Well, I didn't see that one.
I'm trying to get to go to one of the last shows there, but he's great. He was on. I met him in London, and then he's... He's been in New York for a while.
He's a great comedian. Brilliant. Shout out to David.
Yeah, shout out to... the thing is, though, I wonder about you personally. Have you ever been in therapy?
I haven't. You know what? I did a radio show once, and they paid me to go to Harley Street. And so I did it because it was free, and it was just 1 hour. And the lady was like, you seem pretty happy, but you should maybe try to get some data before you come back, like so that she could figure out more about my dating habits or style, because obviously I didn't have a lot to tell her because I wasn't really playing the field, if you like.
So yeah, yeah.
Just like try and join an app like Bumble and then bring the data back to me.
Yeah, I was just asking that because I was wondering, like, I can't help. This is like, this is certainly a Dr. Lisa question, and forgive me, forgive me, but like, I can't help but wonder if there's some conflict about, you know, not your sexuality,
you mean
about
identity,
commitment,
right?
Or something with men. If you do you think that like you, like, because wearing it, it sort of protects you on, it sort of puts you in control with men, right?
Yeah. I think some men just, like, you know, they might not notice if you've had a haircut. Some men are just oblivious. Like, I'm not going to lie. They just don't even, like...
They don't notice. I'm not surprised. So, yeah, you're right. You're right about that. They don't even notice.
I hear your point and, you know, the deeper underlying point that you're making about mm-hmm. kind of balancing mm-hmm. sexuality or how I'm perceived with in terms of my desires and then what can be done about those things.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to say the book is great. I didn't read a cover. I've read parts of it. I don't want to get a test on it, but I will say that what I did read about your parents' relationship is really interesting. You guys really need to read this book, okay? I mean, but it's not nothing to do. Your parents' relationship is not a Western paradigm whatsoever. So, and it was very stressful, I think.
Yes.
Must have been very stressful. So what I'm saying is, I wonder if that made you confused about having relationships with men on some level.
My biggest problem from that was worrying about guys cheating. And that's something that I'm trying to work on because I don't understand, like, what worrying is going to change. And I don't think that, you know, it's... Trust is always going to be hard, but you can't approach it from the worst case scenario. So I'm certainly trying to, like, mm-hmm. I know that isn't an easy thing for me because faithfulness is really important, especially to women. So that was very, like, you know, challenging. And I think it's something that in a relationship you just work on because it kind of comes up and, you know.
Well, I think also trusting a partner is also, I think what's hard a lot of times is trusting your own instincts enough to trust that person.
Oh, yeah.
Your own judgment.
Your own instincts, period. Exactly. Because sometimes you look back and you're like, oh, I did think that thing and then I didn't do it, you know? So it's like just trusting yourself well enough to not kind of do. Yeah, I don't know.
And it's hard. It's hard because the mere dynamic of getting to know somebody means, like, you don't know them and then you still have to trust them at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's no easy way around. There's no way around that. So have you had any long-term relationships?
I talk about my ex-relationship in the book. That was a very
Ray.
And it was a long one. And other than that, I've kind of... had a few crushes here and there, but, like, no, nothing. I work quite a lot, like you New Yorkers. I put a lot of time into trying to kind of, like, write and do comedy.
You got three careers.
It's hard. Also,
oh, no, I know. I mean, I get it.
And we talked about the difficulties I have in terms of trying to find eligible guys. I find that a lot of guys are in relationships already. That doesn't help. No, they don't wear a sign. I don't really like apps. So it's something that I'm open to and would be lovely if it turns up. And again, maybe it's going to happen in New York.
Oh, all right. All right. you listening to this, guys? You got another week left, okay? She's great. I mean, I can totally recommend. I think you guys would. I think any guy out there would be very lucky.
That's so nice of you. Thank you. I haven't paid Dr. Levy to say that.
No. Are you kidding? Ray didn't sound like a great guy.
No, Ray. I think it's. You know, when you haven't had any kind of sex education or even homeschooling on relationships and stuff like that.
Or a good example.
Yeah, it's true. So it's very easy to be like sucked in by looks. And Ray was a looker. I don't know if there's like a complete relationship between like good looking guys and not being great people. That's probably too broad. And it's very unfair to a lot of guys. So I won't go there. But he was very attractive and he knew it. And I think he knew that I doted on him. I fell on every word. And I think because I was quite young and it was my first relationship, it meant a lot and often more than it needed to, given the what it actually was. And so I needed somebody maybe to shake me. But then the problem is when somebody tells you that it's wrong, sometimes you don't want to hear it, or it's kind of even more enticing to kind of, oh, it's a bad situation. So I've definitely learned so much from that relationship, and I wouldn't want to ever kind of repeat the negativity that I think basically I didn't like myself a lot during that relationship, and so I'm working on that.
It sounds like a pretty likely first relationship for a lot of young women.
Yes.
A lot of things that like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
And then you have to learn. We all have to learn the hard fucking way. Mm. So I just wanted people to understand. I printed out headlines of two of the articles that you've written for Metro in London, and I guess we don't have those newspapers here anymore because we have COVID. Here's two of your headlines: "Horny Muslim women like me aren't supposed to exist during Ramadan." Gotta love that. "And men assume I'm not interested in sex because I'm a Muslim woman." They couldn't be more wrong. So that's like saying that you really, you know, that you really, you're sex positive. So how do you get that out? How do you get that message out there on like, how do you get that out there in your day-to-day life? Like that you're available and that, you know, it's, because obviously the hijab, it covers your hair. The idea is that you're not supposed to show your hair, right?
Yeah, I think it depends on the other person as well. Because I think if they are receiving like you, then they'll get to know me as a person as opposed to just like my exterior. So it depends on other people's interests. But it's not that I don't have a responsibility and I'm not trying to cop out.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Wait, go ahead.
It's just to say that, like, yeah, I think it's about kind of like meaningful exchanges. And often, like, when you're so busy and you're just kind of being polite, or is small talk, sometimes those small nuances don't always come across.
So you mean you might not get like guys hitting on you on the train, but if you were at a party and we were having a conversation,
yes,
like I could easily see you as a sexy babe.
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
Yeah, if
hetero,
it came up,
but
if they,
I could see a guy definitely.
If they asked me if I'm single, you know, then we'd go. You know, the conversation.
Yeah, or maybe this book is a good way for you to reach out. Do you think so?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think so on one level, but on the other level, I think it could to the wrong people, give them, you know, the wrong impression that that's all I'm about. So we have to be careful because on the spectrum, you know, I'm not on either end. I'm just a balanced person. I'm trying to say that, you know, this is maybe not how you would have viewed me, but like, look at this. But there's, you know, subtext to it. But a lot of times, especially on the internet, you get guys being like, oh, you know, always just talking about sex to you. And then that's not what you want either. You don't want them to think of you as asexual, but you're not only sexual. So they need to see you as a person, as a female, as a rounded person who has sexuality, but has other things too.
Right. You're definitely blowing up some myths in this with this book and your writing in general. That's really what your first love is writing, right?
Yeah, I love comedy and I love writing. And I think...
Which are the same, really.
Yeah, and I think that's why I like kind of being authentic. So I guess it there was, you know, if you wanted to be more commercially successful, that probably isn't the best route. But for me as an artist, the message or what being honest and real about kind of my views is more important than that.
So you're kind of living a little bit of a social experiment, aren't you? You're like,
that's one way of putting it.
Yeah. You're like, I'm going to be this person, but I'm really this person. And however that gets played out in the world, like I'm going, like you could take an easier route. Mm-hmm. You could take an easier route.
You know, when you've gone down a road so far, because when you start the route, you don't know how hard it is. So you're just going down the road and then you see so much. And then, like you said, there was an easier route, but you didn't know it at the time. And then like, you're already so far down this road now. I don't think sometimes you go too far. You can't go back.
Right. But after talking to you, I mean, I can see pretty quickly that how if somebody was hanging out with you, they'd forget about all this other crap.
Yes.
And it's like you're very, you know, you're sophisticated and stuff like that. It's not like you're like, you know, it's not like you're looking at a vibrator going, what's that?
No.
So do you feel that way? Do you feel like, you know, that when you're hanging out with people, mostly you just forget about the whole thing?
Again, New York, yes. Nobody is that interested or bothered about it, which is refreshing.
What I can't get over. Yeah.
Yeah. I think like we said before, it's waves. So it's certainly more practice, like more women wear it these days. So on that level, I guess people understand it or accept it more. And I think it's sometimes people just not knowing what they can and can't say, and then not knowing how to kind of like bring it up. And so it can kind of sometimes feel a bit inappropriate or random. I don't know. I think.
But how do other Muslim women respond to you?
Mixed. I think sometimes they're a bit challenged by the art that I do, and some of them are quite supportive and they're like, you know, that's really funny and I see a lot of myself in that, I'm really horny and stuff like that. So I think it is mixed. I think sometimes, you know, I think what I'm doing is still kind of, it's very fresh in terms of for Muslim women talking about sex. And so it's difficult for people to know how to respond.
You guys have to get your shit together. It's not a big fucking deal. It's cloth. I guess if there's a guy, it's kind of going to weed out a lot of people, isn't it?
What, the scarf?
Yeah.
I think so. I think, I think, you know, you hope that it works out, and I'm sure that it will at some point. You can't force, like, I don't know how, there's a real specialness or magic even when you meet that person that you're meant to be with. And you can't orchestrate it, is what I'm saying. So I think it's like, you need to be in the right place and open to it, and they need to be into you and all of those good stuff. And so it's so much more than just like your physical appearance.
Do you think that there is such a thing as meeting the right guy?
Yes, I think.
Well, I mean, do you think there's like one person and all that stuff?
It's a great question, and I'd like to believe so. You know, I don't know. I mean, at some point, like, you know, maybe the person that you wanted to be with is kind of busy with somebody else, or you know, in a different country or something like that. So maybe some people never meet them, but it's nice to feel like there is one person that you're meant to be with.
So. The thing that I think about with you is I think, you know, I could see you with all different kinds of men, but I worry about your ability to trust men.
Yes.
I think that's a bigger obstacle than the hijab.
Do you have any solutions about that?
No, but, well, I was going to ask you, do you have any male friends? Do you have male friends, guys that you're just buddies with?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's more like acquaintance or like colleagues, that like colleagues wise.
Do you have brothers or sisters?
No.
That's not good. Can you get some brothers?
But what do you mean, for them to help me find a guy?
No. Oh. I'm trying to figure out how you can trust I think, honestly, I mean, I think that the thing what do I know? I'm not even a real therapist, but the thing that I'm concerned about for you is with your family and the circumstances that, you know, and you're living in, you know, I think trust is, I would be thinking that trust could be an obstacle for you in other words, it's really complicated to meet anybody and have any relationship. And I think that what you have imprinted or learned about trusting it with a man could be an obstacle. I hope that doesn't hurt you in meeting somebody.
Oh no, I think it's like a lesson. And I think it's like you can choose to be passive in it, or you can choose to kind of be a bit more active in it, in terms of like doing things your side, as in like showing compassion or being patient or having good communication. And I think it's a two-way thing. So like somebody knows that. I mean, you know, as much as I want to trust somebody, they also need to trust me. So I think mm-hmm. it's a two-way thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's about, sometimes we can always be in sour grapes, like, oh, I don't have a man and stuff. But I think...
No, I don't see that at all. No, I'm not worrying. I mean, I'm not seeing that at all. I hope you're having enough sex. I think that's hard to, like, I mean, if you're not on the apps to arrange that.
Yeah, I haven't had sex for a while, to be honest with you, but...
She's here for another week.
I'm here for a whole week, guys. But I think you're right about trust being an important thing. But I think with somebody who wants to be trusted, it will be great. And I think that there's some real good people out there. And I think
I absolutely do too. I think that a lot of times, I think I'm talking broad stereotypes here, but I think a lot of times men just, you know, they just don't think that hard about all the shit that women think.
We're very cerebral and emotional as well.
Very emotional. And I think a lot of times they just fuck shit up, and it doesn't necessarily mean they're trustworthy. I think, like, when I first started going out, the guy who's my husband, he would be late a lot. And I, you know, a couple of times I just left and, oh, sorry, I waited 20 minutes. So you would say, well, that guy's not trustworthy.
Oh, no. If somebody,
I mean, I did. I'm saying my own insecurities.
I think it's bigger things, like if somebody, like say your man is traveling away for business and you just want to make sure that he's being faithful, like there's no way of you doing that. You have to trust them. I think small things like, you know, not doing what they were supposed to do, those are smaller things. But I think it's the bigger things, like just having that peace of mind. And I'm sure that, you know, everybody has insecurities, right? So it's like, as much, it's a two-way street. As much as I need to be assured, they also need to be assured. And I think a good relationship, you can kind of work together on building the trust.
In a relationship, but I'm talking about how to get started. That's where the trust is more of a problem. I think trust, once you're really committed to somebody, after, like, I think it takes, like, I don't think you can really trust, know somebody well enough until you see them in enough circumstances after a year. I think it takes at least a year to, like, legitimately.
That's pretty. I like that you you called it, because, like, there's not enough, like, you know, advice out there about, like, what it looks like. And I think that's quite fair. I think you're right, the beginning. But the thing is, I think if there's an attraction there, you know, there's not too much at stake at the beginning. So it's like, you know, it's less jeopardy to be that worried about trust. You can't too... Well, if you're that stressed at the beginning, like, you really do probably need to maybe consult somebody.
So it's either you're worrying too much or there's something's wrong. Casual sex. So do you get opportunities? You enjoy casual sex.
I haven't had... No, I don't really.
Do you?
I like relationships, so...
So I'm... Because this is what I want to understand. Because these headlines say...
Oh, right. Okay.
These headlines make me think that you enjoy casual sex. Look, sex on any, whatever anybody wants to do, I'm all in.
So I don't know if this is giving the game away, but I write the articles and usually the publication chooses a headline.
Oh, you don't write those headlines.
I don't know the headlines.
And, oh, okay. That's fair.
Yeah. Sometimes
it's a big publication. They got, listen, I get that.
I guess what they're trying to just highlight or empathize is that like I feel like Muslim women are so disassociated from sex that they're trying to show that actually they're trying to show that we do have with normal kind of sex and relationships with everybody else. So I can see the reasoning for the headlines, but I guess it's about sex positivity in a space where it isn't often perceived or even portrayed.
Well, in a headline, I mean, in a paper and a headline in today's climate, you have to break through, and that I get why those are good headlines to get that point across. For
and
sure.
Also, I'm a comedian, so horny Muslim women like me aren't supposed to exist during Ramadan. It's just simply funny.
Yeah. Well, that's why it doesn't. Yeah, no, I'm just asking you personally.
I think for me, I know that I want a connection and I want a bit more. So that's the reason is I'm not open to just casual sex.
Okay. Well, see, now this makes a little more sense because I think with somebody who was really into a lot of casual sex, I would think that if that's what they really, really wanted, I would think that hijab would be more of an real obstacle.
Right.
But like you actually want somebody that you can connect with.
I would love a relationship, yes.
Or just some, you're. So that makes good sense. And the book certainly shows your learning and developing through that. And did you feel that by writing this book, did you kind of like maybe think some things through for yourself?
100%. Like you look back at things and you're a different person. You're a bit more grown up. And I think it's like what I really learned, the main thing was about that my relationship with myself was a problem. Like as problematic as my relationship with my ex, Ray J, was, I needed to kind of be nicer to myself or have a bit more standards than what I was accepting from that relationship. So I definitely learned a lot, and just trying to be we can sometimes be a lot nicer to others than we are to ourselves.
Oh,
so if we don't want other people to be treated badly, like we also don't deserve that either. So that's been like a nice lesson.
Yeah, I'm still working on that one.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's really no, but I'm glad to. It's always great to be reminded.
Yes, I'm glad
so this is an issue not with one particular race or one particular type. I think women have this issue. Do you feel like that? Do you feel like it's a common issue among women that women aren't?
I think it's just about an awakening. I think as soon as you realize that you have a lot of worth, and I think sometimes it is a bit more challenging as a woman because it doesn't always feel like we have worth. And so I think it's about being kind to yourself and like trying to nip it in the bud sooner, like low self-esteem or low self-worth. Like it sometimes can really have a detrimental impact unless you kind of deal with it.
Here's something I always say to women in their 30s. Like that's the worst era. I dated a few guys, but that is really the worst era. And I think the problem is that women, when women come into their own and they have their own careers and their own interests, I think a lot of men don't like that. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to admit to themselves that it makes them uncomfortable.
And also it's like, what do they do? You know, what's their purpose then? Because we're kind of like, fulfilled in many senses. So I hear you.
And they're competitive. They're like, I mean, not lately, but I mean, in my 30s, I had a career in advertising and I was making a lot more money than a lot of the guys I dated. And I don't think they pretend they like it.
I think there's a few out there, but probably the majority you face were like that. So I think like, because for a powerful woman is very attractive. But I think so that for the right man, he would have admired that and been impressed by that, I would have hoped. But I think if you were, you know, unfortunately, maybe just most of them didn't appreciate that. And that was work that they needed to do.
Yeah, I think, but I do think a lot of women, like what we do is we wind up blaming ourselves. You know, that's what I did. I'm like, I'm not pretty enough. I'm not fun enough.
You're gorgeous.
I'm not, well, shut
you're
up.
So
thank you.
Pretty, and you have a sexy voice. Like,
oh, well,
I mean,
thank you.
Anyway.
No, but I mean, that's, I'm just saying, I would just
you.
Blame myself.
Yes, we have to be better to ourselves.
And I think, and what's wrong with me? But the truth is, a lot of men. And I mean, and I know this from looking back on the men I dated, you know, a lot of men really, they would put down my artwork or they were critical of me because they couldn't. And these are smart guys. So I want women to know that, like, if a guy, if you don't have a bunch of guys, it could be you're not submissive enough. Okay. So get working on that submissiveness. Do some more sucking up because that's not, I just, and you know, I mean, it hasn't gone away. We've been working on this way too long. And you guys have to, you guys all have to get in line. You know, women are really powerful. Women are so powerful.
Yeah,
we know more. We just know more. We just get it.
I don't understand, like, why it has to be a competition. You know, you can both uplift one another. And, just like, you know, grow bigger balls, as you're suggesting.
I agree. So I want to thank you for being on the planet. I think there aren't enough people like you putting out messages that are helping people create awareness and I don't want to say tolerance, but we're all the same. We're all so similar.
That's so generous. And thank you for being on the planet as well.
Oh,
thank
well, that's
you.
Very sweet. So we've only got 2-3 minutes, so let's make sure we get you go ahead. I got it written down, but you tell them all the things that they should do.
Okay,
where they should go, where they should find you.
So you need to subscribe to this podcast that you're listening to.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Week. You can find me on Instagram at Sadia_Azmats_, and
that's plural.
Plural. And you can purchase my book anywhere you like to get books. So it's on Kindle, Amazon. You can get it at your local bookshop. They can order it for you. I highly recommend it. It's called Sex Bomb. It's about it's called Sex Bomb, The Life and Loves of an Asian Babe. And so that Asian Babes actually used to be a pornographic magazine in Britain.
Oh,
and so
An inspiration.
It was.
As we learn in the book.
Yes, exactly.
Go ahead.
So it's been... It was a real pleasure. I spent a lot of time putting my soul into the pages. I think you'll enjoy it. It will definitely be, as Lisa said, a story that you don't hear often. And so I think for that reason alone, it will be quite a fun read.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we go to London, where do you, is there one place that you perform more than others?
Just, you can look it up online, but it's mostly in central London. So yeah, it just depends where what crazy part of my life.
I got to get my friend Dallas to go see you. That's what I'm gonna do. She's one of my best friends. She was here last week, and
nice.
We had so much fun. She's great. Okay, what else can I tell you? Thank you for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I'm here live Thursdays, every Thursday, 2 to 3. There's more than this is like 348th episode.
Wow.
So you can go to, anywhere as a podcast and listen. And don't forget about radiofreebrooklyn.org. We have an events manager now. So we are going to be partying.
Good.
Yeah. We have some really, really great events coming up, music, comedy. Too bad we're, you know, you got to come back.
I'll have to follow up when I return.
Yeah, come back. Okay, so we've got, thank you so much. We got 30 seconds left. What else can I tell you? I can't.
What are you doing
know.
Later today?
What am I doing later today? I'm going to go for a really long walk. That's my thing.
It's so good out. It's beautiful.
I know. You got some really good weather here. 80 degrees. It's 80 degrees in New York. Can you believe it? Global warming.